Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 302 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton and he's Emil Amanesian. And Emil, we've got a nice edition of La Ronda coming the listener's way. Any questions for each other before we get started? I mean, other than the answer I have of, do I feel better? I mean, not really. If you look at the video, I've still got a little bit of a beard and I'm not feeling great. Might have to take some cough breaks, but I don't know. How are you, Emil?
I'm better than the Barca on-field product from late Sunday afternoon or late Saturday afternoon. But
so are you better than the vibes from that Xavi press conference or introduction? I mean, all that we're going to talk about today.
Probably not, because those were good vibes. that's quite good. I'm trying to latch onto that. I'm trying to channel those feelings.
Yeah, I mean, before we get started with all the Xavi stuff, because I basically took La Ronda. We got a number of questions about different topics outside of Xavi, but because this is his introduction day, this is the presentation day, this is the moment when the new chapter begins. Most of the questions I have are from Xavi. If some other stuff comes up, sure, but we might answer some of those other La Ronda questions later in the week, actually, if they weren't related to Xavi. But as far as Celta de Vigo, yeah, I mean, I guess we could just put a pin in that real quick. I mean, that's not the right idiomatic expression there, but anyway, let's just put a quick thought into that and that's it. So for Celta de Vigo, I thought it was a lot more of what we saw from the previous few games under Sergi Barzuan. Nothing had really changed. Nico, I thought, played rather well. Again, Ansu's finish was tremendous. But to me, it was really a tale of what Xavi is inheriting. A team in the first half that could compete for top four, that could still make the Champions League knockout. And then the second half, he's also inheriting the team that Barcelona currently is, and that is disjointed, disorganized, defensively weak, and very, very young. For better or worse.
And I think the problem is too, and this sort of happened in the second half, it's everything that you said, the disjointed, inexperienced, very young, and, you know, undermanned defensively. And all of that, unfortunately, sort of conspires. When things start going wrong, it seems to, I don't know, kind of spiral or avalanche more profoundly, you know, in a very pronounced sort of way. Like when it starts to go downhill, there doesn't seem to be a mechanism to sort of slow things down, take a breath, and kind of check everything and reestablish. And that's going to be the biggest thing, finding firm footing when, you know, when things get shaky.
Going back to the youth thing, I even look at throughout this entire season where I don't entirely blame youth in so many of those instances. Or I think it was the second goal is Busquets who lost his man.
Yeah,
didn't cover the space in the middle, and it's again not just on Busi, but then you draw the line. You're like, oh well, Alba didn't rotate at the proper time because De Jong hadn't rotated at the proper time because that forward line, that being at the time Easy Abde, who I think it was for the second goal, maybe in the third goal, that he did not press in sync with Memphis because Memphis was a bit tired, and then the young player who's, you know, full of exuberance, had just played for Hercules a few months ago, you know, wants to press. But now there's a space left in behind because he didn't go with Memphis. Is that because of Memphis' effort or is that right? And then so it starts from the point of the attack, works all the way back. And you can definitely pinpoint certain people who made individual mistakes and that led to the three goals in that comeback. And then Iago Aspas doing what Iago Aspas does in the 90s.
Yeah, that's just his move.
In 95. So not to say that we're throwing out another draw, but I think it was probably the most quickly forgotten game. I was still a little under the weather. I got the match review out hours after the fact. And the numbers wise and people watching it, not many people actually did watch it because I feel like people were already, as the kids say, over it.
Yeah.
Again, the one positive I take from it is there was a moment again where Easy Abde passes it to Ricky Pooj, who was playing that match, and then he sprays it out wide to Alex Balde. And if you had told me a few months ago that, you know, Pooj is still going to get his random opportunities, but of those three, Pooj was actually the biggest surprise to be on the field in that moment, because Balde is getting a bit of a role and breaking into the team. And then this kid, again, who played for Hercules a few months ago, Easy Abde, he's a good dribbler. He did what he needed to do for Barca B, he was bright. So he was being used, unfortunately, over Yusuf Demir. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, I mean, for those three to be in that kind of position late in the game against Celta de Vigo, it's a learning experience. And you hope that Gavi's able to look at that tape and go, hey, this is all stuff I can work with. Because if, let's say, we're 2 years ago, right? And that goal was scored because, now I can't remember who was on the team 2 years ago, but, you know, let's say it was Kevin Prince-Boateng who didn't defend properly.
Right. And then
Arturo Vidal gets beat off the dribble up to the middle. Busquets is slow to it. Pique was the one who missed the tackle and it scored. If I'm Xavi, I'm looking at that tape and going, well, I mean, this is all a bunch of 30-year-olds. What am I going to do with it? You know what I mean? Like,
Exactly. It's you're not going to squeeze any more energy and life out of those legs.
Yeah. Well, so the first question I think we start with is talking about the Celta de Vigo match. And then if that's the tape that he got that Xavi starts with, because that's what he should be starting with. Nicholas and Minor both ask, what should be Xavi's first actions as manager? And Minor, a little bit of different taste, in his first 30 days, so almost like a president's first 100 days.
Sure.
In his 30 days, what drastic changes should we expect from the squad, if any?
That's a very good question. So much of it depends on health, because again, we're talking about Ansu Fati's injury situation and things like that. But provided
he's out for a month, so.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it's, In the absence of the full complement of players, I mean, I think the move has to be to play the kids and, you know, see what you have. I mean, obviously not put every veteran out to pasture and things like that. But I think at the very least, we talked about this with some of Koeman's press conferences, where he would sort of deliver those uncomfortable, inconvenient truths about where the club was, both on the pitch and in the checking accounts and everything like that. There's not a miracle fix here. Of course, the objective has to be to accumulate as many points and, you know, win as many matches and try to win every match and everything like that. I think the goodwill is so high, and I think Xavi has enough leeway where he has a genuine opportunity, in a way a lot of this last kind of procession of managers hasn't, to really take stock of the young talent on hand. And because he's going to have a chance to put in his system and implement his formation and his tactics, really kind of take a look at guys. So my hope is that we do see the kids more. I want to see Demir. I want to see Ricky Pooj play and see if he, you know, now that he has a sympathetic coach, kind of, you know, a guy cut from the cloth that he's theoretically coming from. You know, another La Masia guy, I want to see if there is some kind of a mind meld between the two of them, or some sort of a rhythm that they can strike where Pooj is able to maximize some more of his potential.
Yeah, wouldn't this would truly be the end of Pooj, right? Because if Xavi isn't okay with Pooj and Xavi says, hey, I don't think you're going to fit in my Barcelona, then he won't fit in any Barcelona.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, because ideology, philosophy, that's why Pooj could have stuck around. Right.
Yep.
And so that's why he played as much as he did under Setien, because Setien was supposed to be in the same ideology. Not to say that Koeman wasn't, because Koeman, well, I think we made a lot of, not excuses for him, but we did say often that he was doing what he could with what he had,
right,
with the squad he had due to the finances. And I would say, actually, to answer the question about what are going to be his first actions and what are going to be the drastic changes he makes, are things that I don't think we as Kool-Aids outside of the dressing room, outside of dinners, outside of communications, we'll actually see. He actually, I think, said what he was going to do. The first thing he was going to do, he said he wants rules. And so let me get the exact quote here. I think at first it's important that we put rules in place and be more demanding with ourselves. After that, we can talk about values, about respect and attitude, because if we don't have values, we don't have a team. Then we can look at the model, how we play, how we attack, how we defend. It's not about being tough, but having rules. I will try to help the players personally and professionally. I know how taxing it is to psychologically play for this club. So what he might be doing, or what he might do that changes things, is he might be a bit, and a lot of managers do this, especially those that we don't know how hands-on he likes to be. But there are stories going back to Pep's days about he wanted players to eat a certain thing at a certain time the night mm-hmm. before a match or 3 nights before a match. There were certain requests that he would make, just odd requests of yeah. players that were very, very regimented. And so Xavi might come in with these kind of rules. I mean, it could be, they could make a lot of sense. Like maybe Xavi really, really believes in, you know, mangoes or whatever, right? So yeah. or avocados. And he says, hey, I really trust that I want what I did at El Sadd and what I want players to do is eat. We have an avocado snack at 8 p.m. Every night before a match. And we all get on a Zoom call and we all say one thing, a positive affirmation the next day, right? Like, I'm not saying that's a form of success, but I'm saying it's like, he might actually bring in, that's what he might even mean by rules, where he's going to say, hey, I know that Koeman allowed you to get on the bus at X time, but I actually want to stay in the locker room until X time and get on the bus at a different time, right? Like, Xavi wants, is going to put it in his model, his mold. And there's so many little moments, little minutes, X, Y, Z that we don't see because obviously we're outside the club. So those things all behind the scenes, and even the way that they go about communication. And I think that's, again, going to be the biggest change or the biggest drastic thing that's going to be different is Koeman had a certain way of not really talking to people. I mean, it started with Luis Suarez and their 2 minute phone call about Luis Suarez, the third leading goal scorer in club history, exiting the club. And
telling him goodbye. Yeah, basically. Yeah,
35 second conversation all the way up to like Puig kind of getting mixed signals sometimes. And even in the signal he did get, having the ability to refuse that. Right. So for Xavi, I think it's going to be, there's no reason, as you said, he's been completely emboldened. There's no reason for him not to have full transparency on the conversations he has with his players moving forward, because he does have the power to do so, and he does have the backing of the president. So I just think, again, we will not physically see those big changes, but hey, those big changes could mean immediate results and might not mean any tactical changes. It literally just might mean that the team that was up 3-0 holds on to a 3-1 lead. You know, and that might be the only difference, but it might be a very similar team who winds up, again, getting a few results and you're going to feel like everything is different. But no, it's just the team is a bit more emboldened because of what they call, you know, that new manager bump.
I think there's a new manager bounce with a certain element of, and I think you touched on it, there's that almost unparalleled level of institutional knowledge of, I mean, he said it in his own statement that I know the toll, what did he say, the psychological toll or the emotional toll that playing for this club can take. And there are, I don't know, I mean, how many, there's maybe a small handful of people on earth that can walk in and tell a young player who either has signed here or, you know, has just graduated from La Masia what it is. You know, just once the heat gets ratcheted up and once you're not a kind of a young starlet and a little bit of a hopeful novelty, once they're really demanding things of you, here's how that goes. And here's how you actually approach your job to deliver on those expectations.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, remember, a very young Xavi was booed, was jeered, was at the Camp Nou, And he was very close to moving, to leaving, going to, I believe it was Rangers at the time in like 2003, I want to say, or 2000, maybe even 2002. But yeah, I mean, he was close to, after having made his debut, thinking he was the next young thing. He was going to be the next young thing. Pep Guardiola under his wing. And yet he's getting jeered and is on the peripheral of the club. And yet he was able to stick around and wound up to catch iron at the perfect time.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I actually had a conversation with someone here about this recently. I think a little bit of the, and we actually, that period, so when Xavi got his, made his debut. So that was, I guess, what? That was the end of the sort of the ill-fated second Van Gaal era, I believe. Because he gave both... He
kind of got his debut in, what, 98, I think it was? 97 or 98 is when he first made his debut. And then he really kind of featured in the club between 99 and 2001-ish, around that area.
Yeah. And then, but that was, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was when Van Gaal came back and, but because it was Van Gaal, but pre-Rijkaard. Right. So it was kind of, and he's seen this. He's seen Barca in the rocky times when, the wins aren't coming and the fans are upset.
Yep. So speaking of changes, Poncho asked the question, do you think Xavi will finally bend some of the old guard? Also, what are your biggest takeaways from his appointment? Well, let's do the first one. I think it's going to be a lot less complicated than we think it is. I think he's just going to rotate them better. Busquets, I looked this up. I mean, I knew Busquets was playing too much, and indeed he is. Busquets has played the full 90 in all but four matches this season. Yeah, all three of the four coming in September, and three of those four matches being terrible matches, the Bayern, the Benfica, and the Granada. And then he also played 83 minutes in August in the 4-2 win against Real Sociedad. So he came off once in victory or once in success, like you've done your job. Yeah. And the other three he came off because, Barca are done. I mean, they're done and dusted. Let's just to take
him. Might as well save his legs a bit. Yeah.
Exactly. So he's played in all 90 matches and all those other ones. So an entire month straight of playing the full 90. So, I mean, Xavi said that it's an advantage to have a relationship with Pique, Busquets, Alba, Roberto, and even Ter Stegen. So I think that's going to be important. It's not even Busquets, you're the captain, like you have to take a seat or you're going to be benched for De Jong. No, Busquets is just not going to play the full 90 all the time, which is totally fine. And he might actually, come off the bench as a sub occasionally. Not to say that he'll be a sub, but how different is it going to be if he's just only playing the full 90 twice a week instead of three times a week, right? It's crazy. And then Roberto, I think, is the one that he is a captain. Roberto might find himself on the peripheral. He's the one player that I'm like, even when he comes back from injury, he may play only every other match or every third match.
Yeah, I think he's more of a utility guy and just sort of, used in necessity or when someone needs a break, someone needs a rest or, because he's, at the very least, he understands what it is he's supposed to be doing. Whether it comes off as a different question, but I think you can kind of put him in as an old head. But I don't imagine we'll see too much of him, as a regular starter, kind of a true kind of rotation player going forward.
Well, I think that right back spot in particular, if we speak about not Roberto as a right back, but midfield or right back. Like even just because a player comes to the academy, you had mentioned Puig, doesn't mean that Xavi is immediately going to fall in love with them or think that they're the greatest player who needs to be on the field. I mean, he's going to have a list of tasks that he wants each position to do. So a player like Oscar Mangueza at right back, and Dest, very different, right? They're so different of players, and they're both very flawed. They both do good things, but they're both very flawed. Yeah. So the question is, from the jump, which of those two players at right back has a natural skill set that better aligns with Xavi's vision? That player might be the one who gets the first opportunity. And let's say Mangueza, not only does he not really fit exactly what Xavi wants in that position, but he also can't really get to that level. Like he's not exactly doing in training what Xavi's asking of him.
Yeah.
Mangueza could easily find himself on the outside looking in the same way that Balde. Balde deserves time. He's a young up and comer, right? But if Xavi wants a certain thing out of Balde, out of that player, and he's not really delivering that in training, you're like, what happened to Balde? He fell out of favor with Xavi. Well, no, he's 17 and he's going to need some time to get up to speed. And so Xavi's not going to trust him in those opportunities. Instead, it's going to be, Roberto at a position at left back because Xavi feels like he could do the job he's asking of him better. And the truth is the results let's say Balde finds himself back with Barca B and Roberto plays more and Barca go on a 5-game winning streak, right? It's not that it was all on Balde. It's that Roberto better does the job that Xavi was asking, and Barca's results are improving with that. So, you know, as far as the old guard goes, you know, I think it just, it may be a bit more rotation, but it also might not change at all. And it might be things that we don't really see depending on what he's asking of them. But at some point though, I mean, not to contradict myself quickly before I let you go, between Piqué and Busquets and even Alba and Roberto, their physical limitations and the flaws that they have due to their experience, we should say, aren't going to go away. It's a lot harder for those kind of players to get that new manager bump than a young player who can immediately take instruction, internalize it, and use that as motivation and passion. These older players, it's a bit harder. Even if they want to do anything, their body might not even allow them to play for their friend.
Well, I think that's the biggest part of it is, speaking about the old guard first. Yeah, I mean, it's particularly true of Piqué and Busquets and Alba as well. You know, and I've never been a huge fan of just simply piling on Sergio Roberto, but you know, to a somewhat lesser extent, Sergio Roberto. But anyway, to varying degrees, all four of these guys, we've seen in the past, they know what the job is. They know the, you know, sort of that Barca way of playing. They've tasted success, you know, at this club, and they've done some great things. I mean, there's a lot of mileage on all of those legs, and particularly when it comes to Piqué and Busquets. You know, when you were talking about Busquets and maybe him coming off of the bench sometimes, or, you know, definitely not being slated to play the full 90 every week, just clockwork. Honestly, that makes a lot of sense. It's nothing against the player he's been or the incredible, just savvy, and even to this point, talent that he still possesses. But I mean, there come points where we realize that we're closer to the end than we are the beginning. And I don't know that there is a scenario in which playing Busquets 90 minutes every time out, unless it's out of just sheer necessity, I don't know that that is what needs to be happening. And so in that sense, I imagine all four of the old guard, I imagine they'll get fewer minutes. At the same time, I don't imagine anyone's going to be completely sort of frozen out, or, you know, immediately Xavi's just going to come and, you know,
Luke de Jong. That's the one.
What's that?
Except maybe Luke de Jong.
Oh yeah. No, I'm talking about the Barca old guard. Yeah. No. I don't foresee a great deal of Luke de Jong going forward, and that's not the worst thing, but I think the sort of that core four that's still around, I imagine they'll get fewer minutes. But I think there's also an element of, again, these guys have so much institutional knowledge. They understand what the Barca way of playing is. And I don't mean the Barca way, and just even simply on the pitch, these guys understand what it looks like when it works, what goes into it when it works. And so I think in a sense, Xavi can look at these guys as extensions of him within the playing squad. And so I don't think there's going to be a case of any high profile casualties from the squad, but I imagine we will see lighter minutes loads for each of these guys. And that kind of dovetails in with, I don't want to say auditioning, but effectively figuring out, you know, a little bit of experimentation with the young guys to figure out, okay, we can take as read that every one of these guys has talent. They are a talented player to a certain extent. They are objectively pretty good players or good prospects. Sometimes a good prospect just simply doesn't do, it's exactly what you said. Sometimes a good prospect simply doesn't do the thing that you need him to do. That doesn't make him a bad player, but it's worth, these are the times when the stakes, relatively speaking, are lower to figure out what is going to be, who are your foundational pieces going forward, and who can really learn from the old guard and almost maybe try to develop into the sort of organically develop into the natural replacements for them.
Well, just tactically speaking, as far as where he wants his center midfielders, his interiors, and even in the pivot position, he's going to need that institutional knowledge of Busquets, that being Xavi, to even do a similar thing to what he was doing at Al Saad. So Busquets is going to be important to get basically, you know, making Xavi's near-term vision possibility. And to that point about young players, I think we're going to kind of beating a dead horse of this, but Khadijat, and apologies on pronunciation. You can let me know next time you ask a question how to pronounce your name, and I'll make sure I get it right. So with so many young and talented players coming through, what new signings would Xavi look to complete to keep Barcelona competitive in the present? Well, we obviously know the money thing, but yeah. I think as far as there are free transfers, people are spitting out there. Raheem Sterling, of course, is one that the tabloids will continue to spit out. Actually, the tabloids have been spitting him out for a year or two on the Xavi connection way prior to Barcelona. But winger is the answer to that. And it was really telling that we're going to do Dembele later. So I'm not going to mention Dembele, but I will just say that it was telling that Xavi's one comment about an individual player was about Dembele and what Xavi believed and how important he believes the wings to be for the system he wants to play. Something that Koeman basically said the same thing, but he never had those players available. That said, to answer it in-house, so kind of going away from that whole new signing idea, because Barcelona don't really have the ability to do that, but it is telling that when Sergi Barjuan, with what he had to work with, that Easy Abde winds up getting the nod, this really wide, you know, winger, really a winger's winger, dribbly, doesn't really have a finishing product, but they opted for him with Youssef Demir remaining on the bench. Mm-hmm. And then Ilacha Comas, who scored two goals right in front of Xavi when he showed up to the Johan Cruyff Stadium for Barca B. Ilacha Comas is much more also an inverted winger with that left foot, comes off on the right side. You know, finishing product is still questionable, but a bit dribbly, but again, more of an inverted winger, very much just like Youssef Demir. So I think it may not mean even more youngsters. So Xavi might not go back to Barca B or back to the U19s or back into the academy even more, right? We may not see a greater number of youngsters, because looking at how many teenagers with the whole dream team and all that, like, you know, 14 players of 22 years or younger is already pretty, pretty young.
Yeah, spot. Like there's plenty of youth there already. Just kind of harvesting more young guys isn't necessarily the answer. I'm just right. on its own.
And then adding Easy Abde actually makes it 15. He wasn't even in that list because he's you know, not considered a prospect like the others. So we could just see, again, Youssef Demir return. It may mean different young players, not necessarily ones we've seen. We could see less of Eric Garcia, and maybe he likes what Arnaud Comas on the B team adds instead, right? Because they're actually, believe it or not, they're the same age, Comas and Eric Garcia. One just played in the third division and one played in Man City. So he might just favor one young player over another. And then other young players, if they're eligible for Barca B, goes down back to Barca B. But yeah, the injury thing is huge here. So next one for you, Emil. Yes. Ellie asks, with the squad currently having 11 to 12 injuries, how does Xavi being in charge change that? Can the intensity be upped all of a sudden mid-season in training without resulting in even more injuries? And training, this was the one that we keep getting question after question after question about training sessions and things like this.
Look, without knowing anything, but, you know, just even on Twitter, just on kind of Barca Twitter, the questions are really being asked of what exactly is it that the training staff is doing that really kind of no one seems like they can stay healthy. And, you know, as particularly once someone gets hurt, it seems like they're not able to maintain any sort of meaningful stretch of good health and good form before they go down again. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what's happening behind closed doors. I don't know what the medical staff is doing. Now, some of the articles that I did read, I mean, I think I read something in the Athletic recently, just in the aftermath of the appointment, is that apparently Xavi has a staff of guys, like, and a lot of them are ex-Barca guys, or just people that he knows from his days at Barca, who were part of his staff at El Sadd. And so a lot of those guys are coming in. From what I understand, the most high-profile person who's sticking around on the staff from, you know, the Koeman to Xavi transition is the goalkeeping coach. And even he is someone that Xavi knew from prior to his departure.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's completely overhauling the training staff, but I do think that he's bringing in, so he's going to bring in a new philosophy for training. Now, what that exactly is. Yeah. Because as much as you might want to drill these guys and do long training sessions and up the fitness and up the tactical acumen and everything else, I mean, if everybody is either hurt or in the process of being slightly less hurt or just recently finished being hurt, you know, drilling them and running them longer and harder is probably not a great great recipe for long-term health. So, I mean, I think there's going to be some changes in the training staff. That's one of those things, like you were saying, it happens behind closed doors. I don't know that it's going to be tangible or visible to us on the outside, but so I think there's a little bit of that. And otherwise, I guess it's just also an understanding of where each player's physical state is and the injured players, where they are, how likely an injury is to be reaggravated and how close someone is to full fitness and things like that. And pushing them as hard as you can, you know, responsibly given their individual circumstances. So I think it's going to be a lot of, given the sheer volume of injuries that Barca have right now, I think there has to be a little bit of, if not customized, but personalized approaches to training with each guy, because just drilling the squad, because coming in and just saying, you guys aren't good enough. You know, everybody, we're going to go hard for 3 hours. That's possibly going to just break some of your players.
Yeah. I mean, I like that answer because the teams that I've been on, you know, as a player or whatever that I've enjoyed are those that are more receptive, where coaching staffs are more receptive to the individual physical needs of players. Because, you know, if you can all get on the same page and believe that everybody wants to win, everyone is a professional, everybody wants to do the job, and everyone would love to play, everyone would love to be in the field. So once you start there and don't make it a thing about passion or who wants it more or whatever, then you can individually speak to players like that. Yeah, I mean, even, and for people who've done any physical activity, who know, I mean, some of our listeners or some people around this who followed the sport have, you know, never done it themselves, but even like over the summertime, I felt like I was in really good shape. People were letting me know, like I was like, oh, this is the best shape I've been in post 30, and I was feeling it. And then the last few weeks when I had the family stuff, and then I'm still under the weather, I got sick. I tried to go out on Saturday, and I've been icing my hamstrings now for 2 days after this because I just can't recover. I just didn't have it. And even me, I'm playing, you know, pickup. So I'm going at my own pace, right? And if people are watching film on me, I would have heard it to never's end. But that's just because it's been 3 weeks that I not even fell off the wagon, but just other things for me got in the way because I'm not a professional footballer. I know that's our only job and myopically that's all they're supposed to do. But sometimes, you know, physically, players just don't recover the way they're supposed to on certain timelines. And to the point of bringing in his own staff, there will be new faces and new changes. And I also want to mention, too, the relationship that certain club doctors or physios have with the staff. And so there is a level of, obviously, these are all actual medical professionals. And there is a difference of how much pull certain ones have on how much trust, institutional trust that certain ones have. So Juanjo Brau, who is the head of physiotherapy in the first team, has been relieved of his duties today. So we don't know if he was, you know, again, we don't know his relationship with Koeman or his relationship with Bartomeu. And we don't know that if he would say, hey, Dembélé still needs 10 days, but Koeman is like, actually, but I need him now. Was he overruled? Or was it the opposite? Was he holding players out longer than expected as a medical professional and saying, hey, this is more important than that? So Xavi is bringing in his basically his own physio in Carlos Aguera, a member of his staff at Al Sadd. Then the other big power player here, if you will, Dr. Ricard Pruna, who Noah and Dinesh both asked about, what is the likelihood that Xavi brings him back to the club and why did he leave in the first place? And how good was Dr. Ricard Pruna and will he be back? He did take over in 2007 as Barca's club doctor, initially joined them in 1996. So that tells you that his relationships within the club were very much, it seemed like, about the club first and then as almost as a doctor second. But then he left the club in September of 2020, citing disagreements with Bartomeu's decision-making, spent the last year at the club not working with the first team at all. And you kind of get the sense that his voice used to matter and then it didn't matter. And that's kind of why he left, right? You can read between the lines on that.
Yeah. And you can just follow the trajectory of that timeline. I mean, he ascended to team doctor when, you know, the greatest club side in history essentially was taking shape and maturing. And as everything was on fire, that was when he had been marginalized. And
I mean, a great story about him comes in play with Andres Iniesta and his hamstring that I've talked about before on the show that ended, you know, with the World Cup, but also with that Chelsea match and the Chelsea goal, the memorable one. And that basically the issue between Pruna and Iniesta, that because both of them are such amenable people, that there was some confusion about how fit he was, about the risks that he was going to have to take. And he, that being Pruna, didn't even have all the information to give Iniesta. And so the player himself has to take that risk. And it winds up working out. But there are cases where with Ansu Fati, right, where he doesn't work out. And he gets injured, a different injury than his knee, but it's a hamstring because it's he's not prepared to return in the way he did. But how do you get that fitness program right? And then Abbas asked a question even that I'm not going to be able to answer. Let's start there. But how or what is the team's fitness program compared to other major local and European teams in terms of frequency, intensity, specific to certain players? And this is a little diatribe I want to go off real quick. I mean, you'll have me.
By all means.
I feel like there are people on, especially Twitter, who think they're experts on these training sessions for these teams. And the best answers we get are actually from the managers themselves about intensity, about things like that. The parts of training that are made available to the public, even the club social media staff, are generally lighter, and the small games portions of the very first warm-ups that are done in training.
Yeah.
That's when usually media or whoever gets in there to be able to take pictures, a quick video. And then people go and think that those moments when they see Dembele smiling or whatever, they think
they're just jogging around and kicking the ball around. Like that's all they did for three hours. And then
an everyday part of training. So the rare documentary crew or special long written feature may get access to one or two of those closed sessions, sessions, if you will, with that actually have the tactical instructions and the actual conflict and yelling or whatever. And then the intense 11v11 type stuff, but it's not very common. And the story I would
imagine even then, even if you are allowed sort of at least full personal access to one of those sessions, there's probably some sort of moratorium on the true tactical stuff.
And we just don't have access to that. And the story I always have is when I was a beat reporter and a broadcaster, this is now going back 8, 9, 10 years, for very small schools, athletic teams. It was a basketball team in particular. And so I would also, prior to that, I had done sideline even. So when I used to even do sideline reports, I'm trying to get near the huddle so I can hear the coach, right? And usually in basketball huddles, just say, we got to catch him in defensive transition. Make sure you stick to your man, blah, 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 right? Really kind of simple stuff, arbitrary in game, because there's not really any real adjustments you can make other than, hey, make sure you lock in on number three. That's the shooter. Make sure we're closing out on him, right? Yada, yada.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all kind of stuff that you can, to a certain extent, you can kind of tell what's going wrong in a basketball game. Yeah.
But here's the problem. Even then, as I'm trying to hear the huddles, I'd have team managers or, whoever wants to be a future head coach in 5 to 10 years, boxing me out, like pushing me, saying, hey, you know what I mean? Like restricting my access. Yeah. I'm going to immediately take it over to the opposing bench and say, the home team I covered, the home team that I cover that I try to report on fairly. Yeah. Here's all their information that they just talked about in that huddle. Hope you can. Right. And so if you think that, these very, very small schools for basketball, whatever, or even football that I would do, if you think that, and even when I would do coaches interviews before, and I'd say, hey, coach, so what's the game plan against this? And they're like, oh, we're going to keep it close to the vest. Who's going to take that? And how, even if they knew your game plan, how are they going to turn it around in 15 seconds to figure something out? Right. So anyway, if you think that I'll call it out. If you think Division III, right, like rural, wherever, if you think those basketball and football teams, if you think they're paranoid, multiply that by about a million, right?
Yeah.
Million, especially when you have stories like what happened with the Leeds United coach in, of course, Bielsa, when he was literally filming the opposition, right?
Oh, yeah, wasn't he in? He wasn't in.
He sent a scout to.
Yeah. It was the guy that was in full camo hiding in a mountain, right? Or behind some trees. Yeah, that was great.
The Patriots with the New York Jets in the NFL. You have the Houston Astros with the science.
Yeah, trash can and stuff.
Happening. And so the paranoia is at 100.
Yeah.
So if you think some 20-year-old avatar of Pedri or whoever on Twitter knows what Barcelona training sessions are actually like, that's totally out of line. So Abbas, I'd love to answer your question, but usually the information we get comes long after, when Graham Hunter writes a book about it, 10 years after the glory. Then you figure out
when the era has to be over, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you figure out when the very best training sessions were, even Kubala. The only story that come out about Kubala and Helena Herrera was that Helena Herrera would scream at him and he was still drunk. And that was the two things.
Yeah, I think he would go take a nap or something. Exactly. Yeah.
That was the only thing we ever learned, was the conflict that would happen with Romario and Cruyff and Stoichkov in training.
And it was Ronaldinho would come to training in last night's clothes. Right. And he'd go nap on the massage table. And yeah, like these are like, that's what sort of leaks out. And that even then, that only leaks out when, you know, particular people who are have some sort of vested interest in that stuff leaking out.
To sell a book or an excerpt from a book or something.
Or if you're a manager who's trying to plant stuff in the press to get rid of a superstar who's annoying you, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, you don't just like cavalierly throw that out there. Because I was thinking about the same thing. I was thinking about the mic'd up sections, you know, when they come back from commercial, like at NBA games. And, you know, they're right there in the huddle, and you have like Doc Rivers or somebody or Steve Kerr. And it's always the sort of the soft sciences, the man management stuff. Just, you know, it's very like inspirational and encouraging and stuff like that. And yeah, they always say that, yeah, they're not allowed to film, let alone show the actual tactical stuff. So like when they're drawing up a play, they're not allowed to, the ESPN isn't allowed to just zoom in and show exactly where the screen is going to be set and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, they do. Yeah, they're not going to tell us this stuff, you know, I mean.
It's unfortunate because, yeah, I mean, you'd love to know.
It'd be cool to know, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's continue on. We'll try to be a bit quicker with these final few questions here. Liam. Cool. What would we get in a transfer fee for Dembele in January? Again, it's funny mentioning that because his renewal was the major individual player thing that Xavi pointed out. But what's your number? I think we probably have a similar number. If he were sold in January, which he will not be, but if he what would that number be?
I'm going to say, and I'm having a serious bout of recency bias because I massively enjoyed him in the second half against Kiev.
And, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, so I feel like that might have tacked on a couple of bucks, but I mean, what would you say? Like maybe 35, 40?
Yep, I went exactly 40. So I think that since you and I are on the same page, I think that I think that's basically what you could get because his contract is running out, but he's still worth 40 million somewhere. So if they sold him now and you have that, well, basically it's 40 million with a guarantee that he'd sign a new deal with his new team.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's not 40 million for 6 months. Like, let's be clear about that.
No, exactly. And there's been a certain deflation. I mean, he was signed at sort of the apex of the market and, you know, I mean, give or take, but kind of it was immediately post Neymar and sort of everybody was, it seemed like every player was worth somewhere between 65 and 100 million. Whereas now 100 million player is a far, far rarer occurrence.
Yep. Jose asked, would Adeyemi from Salzburg be a good January signing? Of course, the kid has 22 matches. It's an immediate yes. I also actually want to mention on that point that 16-year-old Iker Bravo just debuted for Bayer Leverkusen, which could very well have been in his contract. And remember, he was going to take the jump up from Cadet A. Barca offered him Juvenil B. He wanted Juvenil A. He wanted to be the U19. And that was all she wrote. And then he wound up going to Bayer Leverkusen, which wound up being really good for his career because he's already now made his first NBA debut. And he might not have made it for a year or two. It hurts because he is a center forward. And you look at Barca, and they do have some in the academy. But if he is a player, because I mean, even Iker Bravo now debuting for Bayer Leverkusen 16. Pablo Moreno was a player who was a very highly touted center forward at Barca in the academy for a number of years behind Alvaro Ruiz. He winds up going to Juve, then to Man City, and he's been with Girona for the last 2 years and hasn't really got his career off the ground. And he was considered one of the better center forward prospects of the last 20, 25 years in the academy. And so it very, very quickly, Jordi Mula on the left was on the right wing for a long time. Sergio Gomez is finally finding his career for Anderlecht as this left back type thing, right? But he had gone to Dortmund. So again, a reminder that a lot of players leave and players always, in theory, can return. Xavi actually has held the line, though, on that. Xavi's actually been pretty vocal in his time about when players leave, he doesn't necessarily want them to come back because if they chose to leave Barcelona, that says something about them. So that's actually a question I had. And I'm wondering for even like a Dani Olmo is really, really linked to the club right now. Everyone says everybody loves him, including Xavi. But again, would that mean that Xavi's first, in theory, Xavi's first signing would break his own, you know, adage that if you want to return, I guess so, but I don't really want you because you left it originally. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only way that would really work is if Dani Olmo was the first or the first major arrival under Xavi. I think the way you sell it is Danny Olmo has to go on a almost like a massive charm offensive, to which, you know, Xavi can publicly say that, you know, I do wholeheartedly believe that if you leave Barcelona, I don't think you should be coming back and all of this. But really, you know, Danny showed me something, and it can kind of engender, you can kind of do a little bit of, I don't know, it's almost like emotional alchemy. You kind of create this goodwill. And, you know, I mean, in a sense, I mean, you, whoever the player is, whether it's Olmo or someone else, the returning ex-academy product, to do something like that would probably put them under an even more intense microscope.
Well, like De La Feu, I always think after Everton, and he returns, and I mean, he just, it was never going to work.
No. And there were some games when he first came back where, no, he wasn't, you know, he had no place, you know, next to Messi and Suarez and, you know, like the team of that caliber, but he wasn't strictly speaking awful when he came back, but it just, it didn't work. And then it started to deteriorate quickly. And then, yeah, fans in the press turned against him, and it just sort of, it goes south quickly. The sort of when that, it almost is like produce, you know, souring or going off. So once that starts, once you hit a certain tipping point with the good vibes turning sour, it can be too much to try to claw it back.
Yep. Steven asks, who from the current academy do you believe is going to get called up to assist in helping training of verse 11 during the international break? Well, unfortunately, Hanna Orellana is a player I would love to see, you know, give his best under Xavi, but he is out with injury until Christmas, so that is unfortunate. Kais Ruiz Atil just returned from a lengthy injury, and I don't really trust Mateus Pereira other than with, you know, being with Barca B and being an important player for them. Maybe Antonio Arlanda, who's a 21-year-old midfielder who came from Granada this summer. He's been good, but the success he gets in the third division, including scoring some goals, may not translate to the first division, I think. Again, he's already 21. He kind of is the player he is. Alfaro Sanz is a defensive midfielder who got called up to the Champions League, so he's definitely a pick. He's been with the academy for a long, long time, so he'll probably be in training. He already trained with the first team occasionally.
Yeah, like he'd probably be mine. I mean, if I had to.
Yeah. And then defensively, Arnaud Comas, I already mentioned. Miko Marmol, also basically Barca B's most consistent player, the minutes leader right now. Marmol is a left-footed center back / left back type, but yes, playing left center back. They deserve shouts. And then Guillaume Jaume returned to the club, 22 years old, almost for this reason, to help lead Barca B and also, you know, join first team training. He won't really break in between Mingueza, and they're the same age between Mingueza and Dest. And obviously, potentially there's too many right backs. And then I already mentioned Ilacha Comas. I could see him easily being in first team training. I don't know if he's done too many first team trainings. Usually he'll train with Barca B, and he's still kind of with a U19. So he's an odd one, because he's still 17 now. And if Ilash plays with the first team one day, and then with the U19s and the UEFA Youth League, then, you know, the midweek, it's not that surprising. Like a player like that, who's just so mercurial, it could be Xavi really, really likes him, or Xavi's like, hey, this kid doesn't finish at all. We need like two or three more years. I know he had the two goals the other day, but hey, we don't need to see much more from him. Then unfortunately, Angel Alarcón is still out with that long-term knee injury, which is really frustrating. Because I think when you talk about Xavi wanting wingers, Alarcón is a young winger that, I mean, kind of a center forward, but a young winger that I would have loved to see with him. And then there are other players like Chusalba with the U19s. I think Xavi is going to like a player like that. And then even a center back, Diego Almeida, but he's more on a path already laid out for center backs. So I don't think Xavi's going to mess with that. I think the guys that are with the U19s or whatever it is, you know, the 17, 18, 19-year-olds, I think he's going to keep them at their level, you know, keep them on a path. And again, it's more about the communication. We may not see them change their level, but we may not see Xavi have that conversation with Chusalba, but it might happen, right? That Koeman may have never had that conversation, that Xavi is going to say, hey, the academy is really where I care, where this all matters. So anyway, last one, Emil. Well, actually, we have two more, and they're probably two hard ones, so we'll try to do this in 10 minutes. So Fernando asks, what are the fair expectations that Koulé should have for Xavi? Should we expect him to help secure top four, expect him to compete for the Copa del Rey, etc.?
I don't know about expectation, but I think the reasonable hope is for top four. Like if he gets top four, that needs to be seen as a genuinely positive outcome. My expectation is that they accumulate, just stronger play. I mean, the trajectory improves at the very least. And because right now they are, what is it? I believe 6 points behind fourth place. Right. And so you can only make up what the teams ahead of you drop. So, but I think at the very least, if your own standard goes up and you're accumulating more points per game out. And also my expectation is that he implements something to, even if it's not fortifying the defense directly, but to at least some sort of tactical shift or some kind of strategy, you know, a roundabout strategy to almost hide or protect the defensive weaknesses when they're exposed. But I think realistically, top four would be a positive, I think, you know, kind of a top quartile outcome. Otherwise, I think we're probably looking at top five, top six. Yeah, and I think Copa del Rey is probably the best. I mean, it is the best shot at silverware, I think. And I think that would also be a great way, you know, a cup run would be a really good way to, I guess, further bolster the positive vibes that he's riding in on.
Yeah, I mean, that Europa League spot, I think, is much more realistic at the point that the club is at. I mean, Real Sociedad is still leading the table with 28 points. We know that they did a very similar thing last year. And then in January, they really started to fall off when they played the Spanish Super Cup and all that stuff. So Real Sociedad could fall off, but La Real have been the best team in the Liga so far this year, which makes it muddled because then you have Real Madrid, Sevilla, and Atletico Madrid, all with one loss as well, and all who do not drop many points. And Real Sociedad do have a game in hand, so Real Madrid and Sevilla could actually jump them for the top of the Liga table. Then you have Real Betis, who's been good. And then, yeah, teams like Rayo and Osasuna, Athletic Club, Valencia, Espanyol, Villarreal, Mallorca, all the teams that are right around Barca at the moment, those teams are all going to drop points and all going to drop a lot of points. They're all going to go on their valleys. They're all going to go on their runs, you know, where they win two or three in a row. Osasuna may have already had their hot streak. You know, they've been a bit, their results have been a bit dire in recent times. But yeah, even Real Betis is going to, you know, have good results, have bad results. So I think top five, actually, that Europa League spot is much more realistic when you have the top four that I think are kind of establishing themselves. Even as I say that, though, other than La Real, Real Madrid, Sevilla, and Atletico Madrid have not looked good at times. They have all had their, not even one, but two or three matches that they have looked as dire as Barcelona.
And yeah, so, they scuffle,
And so as it's weird because our expectations have to be tempered by the expectations in La Liga. If any of those, if all those four top four at the moment teams wind up really figuring it out at the same time that Barca figures out, then top four isn't really realistic because of all the points that were already dropped. And so it's difficult to kind of look at everyone else and say, okay, where are they? Right now, they're still showing you that they could drop points. So I think top four is fair to ask of Xavi because other teams around them are also not firing at all cylinders. And that's, so it's fair to say only 6 points behind Atletico
Madrid. Yeah, that's the thing. It feels like this team is more than 6 points out of fourth place.
Right, but they're just not. Everyone is not great either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, just in a vacuum, us watching Barca and, you know, suffering through some of these results that we have.
But even Benfica, Emil, in the Champions League, are we expecting Barcelona to win that match without Ansu, without Dembele, without somebody put the ball in the back of the net other than Memphis Depay, who's really run cold? And when we had spoken about him coming, we knew it would be hot, we knew it would be cold, we knew it would be fun sometimes, and we knew it would be dire others. And Memphis has shown us that he's, even under Koeman, who is a manager who's supposed to be really supporting him, Memphis has proven to be that. But, you know, should we expect Xavi without Ansu and Dembele to be able to get a result against Benfica and make the knockout? Is that a fair expectation?
Expect? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, to expect it, I think, would be a little bit unfair, given the squad limitations and the fact that he's, I mean, he's still kind of putting together his squad, and, you know, we have to see what's actually available to him. I don't know that I would necessarily expect it. I think it's more we're hoping that they do that. And otherwise, I think, I think that's why I don't necessarily think they're going to go out and get trounced in the return leg against Benfica like they were the first time around.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not expecting a victory. I mean, I think maybe if you pull out a point and, I don't know, you go into that last match day hoping that Bayern just really don't care, but so I mean, I think that's more realistic. I mean, it's not completely impossible, but I certainly wouldn't expect it.
Yep. And then Khaled, last question: how much time will Xavi get? Well, I answered this in a tweet. I said that if I hear even a single Xavi out till like 2023, I mean, I'm blocking.
That's still way too early. No, I mean, look,
2023. I mean, I'm saying. I'm saying if Xavi clearly isn't the right man for
the If it's just
year and a half or 2023. Yeah. So a whole year and plus from now. So I'd say he at least gets at least a year and a half to figure out if he's out of his depth. Because I think what we've seen at Al Sadd, not even him being a club legend, but what we've seen at Al Sadd, you could argue that Koeman basically got a year and a half too. And he had had a lot more failures in his managerial career.
Yes.
And I wouldn't even say, I would argue maybe he didn't have the same number of success, though Xavi did in Qatar. But I think even the Qatar stuff, as unfair as it is, we kind of have to throw that out and say, okay, this is Xavi's first job, really. This is what, just like with Pep, where he was Barca B, but he's taking over. Xavi's taking over Barca. This is going to be, it's entirely different. It's an entirely different world. It's going to be, you know, the ideas that he's going to try to put forth are going to be ones that are either going to sink or fail. And we'll see if he could do it. And I think it's going to be about a year and a half for Barca's finances to be able to support his ideas. Because I think he does deserve, and Koeman never got this, but Koeman also somehow his personality just didn't allow him to get this. He was not amenable with the media enough to make those excuses make sense. So I don't think Xavi's going to make excuses in the media. And I think the media are going to support him to get multiple transfer windows when the club is able to redefine things. I'm not saying like a Erling Haaland level signing ever that he might
do,
but if he can get, again, a winger that is going to be the cheap, or if he can get, you know, some cheap defensive midfielder or center back or whoever that he is handpicked to reinforce his squad next summer and give him two or three signings then, and then give him the opportunity to have Coutinho and whoever, Umtiti, and whoever else around the peripheral of the club no longer be floating around his training sessions, where he can look around at the 25 players in training and say, hey, all 25 of these players, like Pep at Man City,
like they're mine.
Right, all 25 are the ones that I could rely on tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would take, I'm along the same lines as you, but more so, I think. And, you know, again, I guess I'll caveat that by saying, you know, let's assume that it, at no point is it just a complete like abject failure. But let's just say if the progress is coming a little bit more slowly than people wanted. And I'm not talking about a complete train wreck. I would say the remainder of this season and the next two at minimum, because there's a couple of things at play here. Outside of what Xavi has done at Al Sadd. Now, that's the thing. The competition level that he was facing wasn't terribly high, and he had the team that had the greatest resources in the league. So, you know, fair enough. Like, I'm not so much concerned with what it was that he won and things like that, but it was the fact that, by all accounts, I mean, even other managers, other international managers who coach in the Qatari league observed him and saw that he was doing the job properly. He was able to implement philosophies. He was able to implement tactics. And, you know, it was reps, and it was low stakes, you know, educational reps that he got in. So I think, you know, assuming that we're going to go ahead and assume he knows the nuts and bolts of the job. He knows the hurricane that surrounds this club, you know, at the best of times. And I think the thing is, too, that there isn't another Holy Grail manager candidate. Like, you get to break this glass one time. You know, when everyone was calling for Valverde's head, and then it was Setién, and Setién had to go, and then it was Koeman, but it was always the specter of, well, we have Xavi. You know, Xavi's just, he's cutting his teeth in Qatar. You only get to do this one time, and there's not another, you know, Messiah on the way. So, like, you don't ruin this guy, you know, like, just, he needs to actually have a chance to do this properly. And look, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And because I don't think he's going to come in and absolutely set the place on fire and just have it, you know, have it end in complete disaster and tears. Like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's fine. But we need to give it a real proper chance to work. Also, the thing is, this is the guy that we were hoping for. You know, this is he was the guy that was going to come and usher in the next era of the Barca way and return the Barca DNA and all of the idioms, all the stuff we say. And so now I feel like, and there is very much a faction of Barca fandom on Twitter that, you know, very performatively is not okay with anything that is anything less than optimal. And
right. Yeah. People will be out on Xavi. People will obviously, the minute results aren't going there.
You can't do that.
It's going to be, managers are always going to be blamed. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. I think that's right about Xavi and about this moment happening. The entire time that we've had this podcast for 302 plus shows, it's always been this thing where, well, can Valverde be doing more as a manager? Is he out of his depth? Is Koeman the right man for the job? And those answers have always been right. Valverde always felt like something was missing there. Like he was getting results, but there was always something missing. And then with Setien, he was out of his depth. And with Koeman, it was, the issues we talked about. Yes. And now you're right that all of this whole time culminating in this moment was that even if Luis Enrique was, had his detractors, you always felt safe in his hands, if that makes sense. Where he would make bad decisions, and Xavi would make bad decisions. We're going to disagree with his substitutes. We're going to disagree with some things he does, and that's going to happen. But does he have the big picture? Do you trust him in the myopic view of the club's success? And I think in this idea of perfection, and that's like ingrained in Kool-Aid's minds, is this idea of ideological perfection and on the field perfection and trophy perfection. And is Xavi capable? Is like, right? Because in our minds, he is that figurehead who is capable of that perfection. And when he falls short of that perfection, how long is it going to be? And how much of the chorus of those who are going to say Xavi is the fraud that we thought he was? How quickly are they going to, because I've already seen people that I respect say, I don't know if I trust him. I don't feel good about this. And there's the people that I trust.
That is, that's nuts.
Right. And it's right. But it's already happening. Yeah. And I think it's people protecting themselves, even saying like, hey, I'm smarter than everyone else, because I knew that this, everyone else is falling into the good mood and feeling good. And me being the cynic, I'm ahead of it, right?
I'm the smartest kid in the room. Yeah. Like I saw the cracks when no one saw them, when you guys were just dancing in the streets. Like, yeah, exactly.
A manager being appointed is not a trophy won. It means nothing.
No.
But I will end the show by saying, I've been saying this for a while. It's true. I have this weird sense of calm with Barcelona's material situation that I have not felt. Even when we began the show with Valverde, because as much as I liked Ernesto Valverde, it was true. I was always worried that he was going to play Arturo Vidal over all the young players. Yeah. You know how many years I spent watching academy games going, why am I doing this? Valverde is not going to play this kid. This kid is ready for the big time. I mean, Carlos Alenia, I did it for 2 years, even with Valverde. I said, Carlos Alenia, how is this kid not playing? I don't understand. Yeah. And then he just never played. And now he's gone. And now with the club playing young players, being in the situation they're in, Xavi now coming in, I just want to feel good. That's all. Maybe it's because I've been sick for a while. I've had some, the family stuff's been knocking me down. I just want to feel good. I don't know.
That's the thing. I think the vibes are good. I think it's okay. For the first time in a minute, it's okay to just kind of feel good. Like this guy who did some of the most brilliant things in the middle of the park at Camp Nou is here to try to impart that wisdom and do it again.
I'm also excited, honestly, to watch the match again and say, look at the nuance. Because for the last even 5 minutes, no offense to Sergio Barzuan, but I wasn't looking for anything. I was literally just looking at the match. And then
it was just kind of caretaker stuff. It was just keeping the seat warm.
So I'm excited to go back to watching matches and be able to constantly be asking why did Diego? I mean, why did Oscar Mingueza jump at that moment? Right? Is that an activation from the coach or is that a decision by the player? I want to be able to question every single decision each player is making at different instances in the game. I want to say that spacing is either on purpose or isn't, and all those different things that I try to do my best with match reviews. I'm excited to get back to Espanol and spend a long time watching it and rewatching it. And I'm finally excited to watch Barcelona and care about every little nuance that we're watching on the field.
Yeah, like as much as anything, I mean, this is a deeply, deeply philosophical, it's a philosophy base. I mean, we'll talk about, we can talk about nostalgia and emotions and everything else and, club legend and everything. Most importantly, I mean, this is a philosophy based appointment. I mean, this is, if we want to do the thing, it's the straight line from this guy learned at the knee of Pep Guardiola, who, it's it's the perfect connection of Xavi to Pep, to Cruyff, to, you know, Rinus Michels and Vic Buckingham. And yeah, like, we, so this is what we wanted. And, you know, there's no guarantee that it's going to work, but this is what we wanted. So it's cool to be happy as long as, you know, as long as there's optimism there to lean into.
Yep. All right. So no more. We're going to end with optimism there. Yep. So thank you for staking with us for the show. If you're on Twitter and Instagram, you can check him out. He's Emil Evanescian, and we are the Barcelona Potter at SMD13 for me. Our closed Facebook group where we got these questions from, that's the Barcelona Podcast. Answer the questions, and I'll let you into the group. Don't answer them. I don't say this in the group. Mm-hmm. Also, behave yourself in the group. That's another big thing I always say, or else you get booted from the group, like I have with quite a few people recently. Mm-hmm. And then if you're willing, Patreon is how you can help financially support these shows and also get them without the ads over there. So thanks for that. And then on YouTube, yeah, I've been sick. You can see if you're watching the video portion that the beard is getting longer, but I am planning on getting better, getting some vitamin C after a week of being knocked down. And that also means that I'll be back to making some of those fun match reviews and some other content. Again, it's almost the winter time, so that means it's almost time for my next man up or whatever in the Masia, even though the club itself is kind of spoiling that for me. They're kind of letting you know who's up next, including Xavi and all that. But most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon with Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.